let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. This Week in America, great to have you with us on the program today. Our pleasure to welcome back to This Week in America acclaimed writer Clem Maslov. He's been involved with science fiction and speculative literature since 1941 and 42. That's when he taught himself to read. Clem served in the U.S. Army as a linguist and translator in four Balkan Slavic languages. He taught sociology for several decades in Ohio after graduate research in Russian social history. Since retiring, well, he's returned to his dream of the early 1940s, and that's writing science fiction. Among his books, Light Up the Valley, Psychographia, Diploids, books we've talked about on the program before and available in our archives, Mining the Mineral Mountains, Amphibiates, and Galactic Minds, the topic of the last program we did with Clem, and now talking about his critically acclaimed science-fi novel, Trees Unlimited. Author Clem Maslov back with us on This Week in America. Clem, it is always a pleasure. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
You have such an imaginative mind. Every book is different and takes us on different journeys into different worlds that you have created. But talk about Trees Unlimited. Where are you taking us? This is the whole concept of this is quite fascinating.
Oh, yes, it's almost like a dream down in a tropical rainforest.
Yes, that's what you
and
think about.
I was always thinking, you know, we have the sequoias out west. We have gigantic trees that, you know, are great and high. What if we could make them triple the size they are? What if we could make them quadruple the size? And that's not a new idea. I remember back, right after World War II, great predictions were made. Right in the middle of the 20th century, predictions were made. Very soon, we will be able to control growth of plants. We will have control and conquest of photosynthesis. We won't have to grow food out in the fields. We'll grow food in factories because we'll control this. Well, this is an idea that's not new, but try to apply it in a situation, and I try to combine it with the idea of a planter group. There's one ethnic group, and the our workers and the tribesmen of that area of the rainforest, that are another ethnic group, and the conflict between them, and how life would change if all of a sudden there was a change by which the trees that they cut down, the trees that they sent out of the rainforest, could be made triple or quadruple the size and grow quickly and be under control that way. So that's the way I try to make the Trees Unlimited, and how people have to sort of adjust to that. And I have actually in this area two romances come into the story.
Yes.
This was not foreseen, but in the during the method of writing it, during this period of writing it, this sort of occurred among the characters themselves. Sometimes the characters, you know, take over and they write the plot.
Yeah, we've talked about that before. Yeah, and that's so fascinating that when you go into a story, sometimes you don't know where they're going to take you, do you?
That's right. You have to listen to the characters. If you know them well enough, then you can well see what their reactions to each other and how they will react. For example, among the two couples that I have, one of the women that comes to the rainforest is from a different country, and she comes because her father is very wealthy, and he's interested in leaves, and he collects leaves, and this one planter is trying to sell him his leaf collection. At the same time, the planter wants to get a rich wife and hopes that these this foreigner's daughter will be a potential candidate for his marriage. He has a sister, too, and the sister is kidnapped by one of the bandits, one of the local tribe's bandits, and she doesn't get along with this guy. This is her bandit that kidnaps her. But eventually they form a romance among them, too. So the idea is that people that at the beginning don't like each other and don't understand each other can come to have a romance. And I said this is quite common, maybe not in literature, where it's love at first glance, but this often happens in real life. And I try to bring it into the story here, too. And it more or less happens that way, that the people that are that we see at first look or first glance that are not likable become likable as you get to know them and they come into your sphere of life.
Yeah, and we
so
follow
we have
that.
The planter's daughter with the bandit chief, and we have also the foreigner, this foreign rich girl that comes into the rainforest, that meets with a scientist who has a research station in which he's developing a way to control photosynthesis, a way to bring it into real activity into the forest, make the forest into a super garden, almost a Garden of Eden, in which trees are completely controlled. So these are the two things that are brought together inside the, and I sort of show how they react to each other. That the whole idea is how these characters change from experience, how their character is shaped by their experience, and how the characters they begin with are changed by the new people they meet here in the rainforest, and how they come to become familiar with them and see the inside nature of the mental background of these people.
That's what's so interesting with your books is the characters
in the main plot.
Yeah.
And I try to do this, and I did not see at the beginning how it would end, how the actual solution to all these problems and conflicts these people were having would occur with the new trees, and what happens to the new trees. Just before a battle occurs between the natives and the planters, between these two forces there, something happens to the trees. And that more or less is the solution to it, the key to how the thing is settled. But I don't want to give it to, before somebody reads the book. I don't want to, identify it too much ahead of time. But that's where it comes. And I did not foresee it when I was writing the book, that the trees themselves would have the solution to both the romantic problems and the social tensions between these two groups in the forest.
That's interesting.
That was some things I had when I wrote this. And by writing, I discovered much about what was going to the book. And I could not foresee it. These characters did not always come out the way that I thought at the very beginning.
So throughout the outline,
learned more about each other than I really put in there at the beginning.
So it's interesting, if you're reading Trees Unlimited and you're a couple chapters in and you're thinking, I wonder where he's going with this. You were too at that particular point in time, weren't you? When you were writing the book, you weren't quite sure where it was going.
It happens that you have questions, Bo.
The characters
bring up questions, and somehow they bring the answers. It's happened sometimes that after a good night of sleep, I wake up in the morning and I know what these characters would say, what they would do, as if they spoke to me in my dreams.
Well, I think in a sense that they are doing that.
That's not just my own idea. That's not that original, but it happens many times when there's questions or there's roadblocks you have when you're writing something. I just take a day off or something, and I find this is often, I write some other story while I'm thinking about this story, and coming back to it often provides overnight a solution to whatever these characters are suffering from.
Clem Maslov is our guest on the program.
Quite common. I work on more than one project at a time.
Is that confusing?
Down sometimes and just let it aside, sleep on it a little bit, and then go back, and you see more of it. You see parts of it you weren't really focusing on at the beginning.
Does that get confusing when you've got several that you're juggling at the same time?
Yeah, you don't want to bring characters from one story into another.
It's like, wait a minute, that's the wrong story.
Or sometimes you take a character out of one and just throw him over into another one where he has a better fit and he can be more useful there. One thing I brought out was that these natives see the trees almost as spiritual objects. They see their own souls being born from the trees, and when death comes, their souls go back into the trees. And I thought this would be I don't think it's that original, but somehow I've seen this or heard about this, and I thought this would fit into the story of why the natives, the tribers in this book, are so opposed to all these planters making big money by cutting down the trees, because they see it almost as sacrilegious to be cutting down the trees and chipping them out of the country and harming the souls that are going to be born from these trees in a little while.
The book is Trees Unlimited. The author is Clem Maslov. That's Masloff. You'll find the book, of course, at Amazon. If you go to bookventure.com in the bookstore, you'll find that, as well as all of the other books written by Clem. They are all very, very fascinating reads. Once you start, you're not going to want to stop too often. You want to keep going and see where Clem is taking the story. You can link on directly to his books by going to our website, thisweekinamerica.us. You mentioned that this was an idea, this whole concept came about years ago when you remember reading and hearing about it. Do you keep a notebook over the years of all of these stories, or are they just in your mind that, you know, maybe I'll store this in my mind and maybe a couple of decades later it'll be useful in a book?
This happens often because predictions are made, and I remember predictions way back. I remember I would buy for 25 cents or 35 cents, you know, some science book or some popular mechanics book, and there would be predictions in a few years.
Oh, yes.
We'll have
yes.
this, a few years we'll have that. Nobody ever mentioned a computer. That was unforeseeable. But they did foresee that we would control photosynthesis, and they're still working on that, and the chemistry of that is still a big puzzle. And using light, controlling light, getting the exact light that would make things grow at triple speed or quadruple speed. And of course, we use fertilizer more than other things.
Yes.
And different chemicals on the soil. But the idea around in the 40s and 50s was eventually the land will be out of date, and eventually we'll be producing food the way we produce cars.
Yes.
And the forest will control the forest. We'll get exactly the trees we want growing down there in this tropical forest.
Well, and we see that, and it's interesting. Talk about that, the balance, because you do science and technology, the sci-fi part of it, where you bring in, you create this world, and we wonder whether this could actually happen. Is this plausible or not? And at the same time, as we've talked about, you're developing these characters, and we get to know these characters. The characters interact. We have this relationship. Talk about juggling that, where you give us just enough of the sci-fi to keep us interested, but you're also telling a human story as well.
That is, it's sort of a combination of what is often called hard science fiction and soft science fiction.
Okay.
The hard science fiction is the technology, and you can go too far on that sometimes.
Yes.
Some people
yes.
like it a great deal, but there's always a limit to how far you can go because, you know, the writer is not necessarily an expert, and is not necessarily that detailed in the knowledge of this. On the same thing, you have the soft science fiction, which is psychology, social relations between people, and those are those things that have to do with the human side.
Yes.
So you combine the human with the material. I combine, you know, the psychological with the physical, and somehow you get some type of structure from that. And that was at least what I try to do. Not to go too far in any one direction. Have enough of this, enough of that. One thing I try to do is I write in that type of vein nowadays called for young adults.
Oh, yes, yes.
This is like the old-fashioned science fiction. It isn't that much of a literary thing, but has all the latest literary criticism behind it, but it does have a story, and it does have things that are interesting. It was always said, well, the most fervent science fiction writers are teenagers. That's true even nowadays. And even into the 20s, people in the universities, people in before they're settled into their own families and that, are the ones who are great fans of socials, of science fiction. At least that's what I try to write in a young adult type of story.
Well,
maybe it's a little old-fashioned, but that's what I go into.
No, it's an excellent group out there. That's a growing genre. You have more and more people that are writing, established writers that are writing for the young adult market out there, and you do it so well. I can't believe how quickly the time has gone. A few minutes left in the program. I mentioned all the books, and I'll do that again before we wrap up today. What are you working on now? It sounds like maybe you've got a couple of projects you're working on.
What's always fascinated is the ocean, the sea, and the depths of the ocean. And here I'm trying to combine what goes on in the bottom of the ocean with the human mind. And if you can get down to the bottom of the ocean, why can't you get back down into the bottom of what the human beings, their personalities, and are?
Yes.
I'm trying to combine the two. So I have sort of a hospital facility that takes people down into the bottom of the ocean to solve their problems, their personal problems, and somehow trying to figure out how that can happen, if it is possible. I've talked about it with a neurologist I know, and she thinks it's a pretty good idea. Not that she's going to take her patients down there, but she says that's a very innovative way of dealing with personal problems. Take the people down in the bottom on a tour of the bottom of the ocean.
Interesting. How far along are you in the project?
It may be out pretty soon.
Oh, great.
It may be coming out very soon. It'll be something that's going to be published very soon. Maybe this year.
Well, that would be good.
I'm more or less rewriting it and getting the different parts together better. Rewriting is a lot of fun, too, because you see how to improve things as you do that. Hardly anybody does is the first thing. Most writers have to rewrite. Even the best of writers are doing that.
Yes. Well, you're in that stage now, and hopefully we'll have a chance to talk about that book when it comes out as well. Sounds like it'll be a fascinating book, as they all are. Now, Clem Masloff, our guest, Masloff. The book's available, all of the books, at Amazon, of course, at bookventure.com in their bookstore. We're talking about Light Up the Valley, Psychographia, Diploids, books that we've discussed in the program before, Mining the Mineral Mountains, Amphibiates, Galactic Minds, of course, Trees Unlimited today. If you go to our website, thisweekinamerica.us, you can link on directly to get information on Clem's books. And you can listen to past programs in the audio archives and the YouTube versions as well by clicking on video on our website. Clem, as always, it is a pleasure. Time goes by too quickly. Fascinating. Excellent job once again with Trees Unlimited. I didn't realize they had names for that, but with the soft sci-fi and hard sci-fi, you're the master of combining both of those. It's an excellent read once again. Thank you for being with us on the program. Look forward to having you back. Thank you for being with us once again.
Thank you.
It is always a pleasure. Clem Masloff, our guest, the book, The Latest Trees Unlimited, book available at bookventure.com, as are all of Clem's books in their bookstore. You can link on directly by going to our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Back on today's program after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.